This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Hi, I'm John Oliver, member number one. You're listening to Joy 94.9.
Hello and welcome to Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9. In the studio with me today is young Phil.
That would be me.
And young Gordon.
Oh, thank you for the young bit. Yes, this is me.
And I'm young Chris.
Yes.
Well, you know, whilst we haven't got TV, we can describe ourselves any way we like.
Perfect faces for radio.
You're only as young as the man you feel.
That's right.
What? Or something.
Thank you very much indeed. What a week it's been.
Oh, God, there's been so much happening, hasn't there?
Oh, well, can I just talk about a couple of nice things?
Mm-hmm.
I burnt my eyeballs out at Queer Film. I saw 9 films and they were all quite presentable. A couple were really moving and a couple of duds, but all in all. Oh, but it upset my body clock because I was getting home in the wrong time and not eating dinner and things like this, or having too many choc tops.
There's a problem. That's the thing when you go to those yes. marathon movie things.
You can
things.
Catch theatrical diabetes.
Yes, something like that, yes.
Well, as long as you don't get anything worse than that.
Yeah.
Well, it depends where you sit.
Yeah, and I went to my first gay wedding. To same-sex marriage, yes, which was very, very nice. Yes, it was on Saturday afternoon. It was very, very well done, and everybody seemed to have a good time, although I did sit up opposite a gentleman I fear had a bad case of homophobia.
Ooh.
I don't know why he was there, you know. I think he was made to come because he was related to one of the grooms.
Oh, right.
Or by marriage, but yeah.
Oh, so it wasn't.
He wasn't okay, wasn't a blood relation. He was marriage. Yeah. So, but he sat there and looked like as though he'd lost a fiver and found 2 bob or something. Right. You know.
That's an expression that I've never heard before, but it's quite appropriate.
Yeah, well, it's an old one.
It expresses his loss.
The other thing that's happened recently, all apart from the Formula One and the planes flying over and frightening
the hell out of everybody,
and the children and the dogs and the cats.
But there wasn't a letter in the paper this morning that was saying why the waste of money to do that. But they have to pay for that plane to fly over there. The government don't give it to them. They've got to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to get that plane to fly around.
It comes all the way from Williamtown.
Town in New South Wales.
Yeah,
yes.
So that was the weekend that was. And Formula One, it was beautiful weather. Wasn't it marvellous? Rain earlier on and then after the sun went down, perfect weather for rain. And we washed all the dust and the petrol fumes out of the air.
Oh, good luck.
However, I'm not all that impressed with our cricketers.
Oh,
Gordon, I understand on Monday, as you were coming out of the station, you were invited to express an opinion.
I did express an opinion, and very forcefully.
Yes.
The young lady.
Thumbs down.
The young lady said to me, "What would you like to see done?" I said, "I think they should sack the lot of them." She said, "Isn't that a bit hard?" I said, "No." I said, "They all deserve to go from the top down."
Yeah.
I said, "You don't leave any of them standing." I said, "I when I went away, I should have said, you can cheat in politics, you can cheat in business, but you shouldn't cheat in sport."
No. We have the Australian cricket team and some of our other sports people as icons.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Icons you should lift and hold in the highest esteem.
Well, according to the laws of whatever we suffer under, the Prime Minister has the top job and the Australian captain of the cricket team has the second highest job in the land, the most recognisable job in the land.
Mm.
And there he is acting like the dingling.
Speaking of dinglings, I didn't vote for either of them.
Neither did I.
I don't know where their head was. Or their conscience, as or I said, their heart.
I said to the young lady, I think they've been hit in the head too many times by a cricket ball.
Mm. Well, it's the same decision that Essendon made. Let's use the term supplements. Obviously somebody had a brain fade somewhere. Yeah.
No, they're somewhere along the line.
Someone who actually is an icon in the gay community in the US, mm-hmm. And was part of the history of the freedom that's now being experienced by the gay community. We're talking about Harvey Milk, the supervisor. Mm-hmm. Is that the expression?
That's right, yes.
He was San Francisco city supervisor.
That's right.
Now, what does that mean? Like mayor, is it?
No, the councillor.
Councillor.
Ah.
So they had a mayor, Mr. Moscone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Harvey Milk had passed a lot of, well, I guess to put it mildly, gay-friendly laws.
Well,
I guess it was the start of the fight towards equality.
He was standing up for our community, which is what he stood for.
Well, it was the era of Stonewall.
It was the late 70s, yeah. And he was out and proud and elected.
And he was on, he had a voice. How did he have a voice? Because he was a...
Well, he was the King of Castro.
Yeah,
King of Castro. One thing. Yes, that's right. And
his audience were very concentrated in the area.
Yeah, that's right. And when they got to vote for him, and he became elected, but he was assassinated a year after he took office. And now they are going to honour him in a very, very unusual way, which is a beautiful way because
well,
it means...
rather than putting up a useless statue or something for the pigeons sign. To poo on, apparently in San Francisco they have decided to name an airport terminal building after him.
They thought about doing this about 5 years ago, and that's taken all that time for them to come to the decision. The supervisors now have decided that, yes, they should do that because he had such an influence on all the LGBTI community and what they stood for.
And in recent years, his story has been out, and he has been honoured for the leader he was and the hero he was, really.
Philip, you and I were discussing what he could have done, perhaps, had he not been assassinated. What sort of history would he have had then? But as you pointed out, he's remembered now because he was assassinated.
Yeah, it's a tough call. We compared him to some musicians whose genres have since faded away.
Yeah, yeah.
I doubt whether he would have faded away. I don't think that was his personality. But in a sense, he's become, I hate the word martyr, but almost a martyr to the cause. And, I mean, Terminal 1 at San Francisco Airport being named after him is a huge deal.
Well, I mean, it's got to be bigger than what, as you pointed out, Moscone had. He had a stadium named after him.
No, he's got a convention centre.
Convention centre, yeah.
And it is the peak convention centre in San Francisco. So he'll be remembered through that. The Moscone Centre is quite famous.
But the thousands of people that march through the Harvey Milk Airport Terminal every day.
I'm not sure. I think Terminal 1 is the United Terminal.
Oh, right.
And that's a major hub. So, yeah, his name will be well remembered.
Yeah, well, you know, it's with JFK Airport.
Mm. Mm. What did he do? He was in a lot of films. PT-107.
Yes, that's right.
And, some guy was shot. I think it was his brother.
They're both shot.
They had not a good family to join, I'm telling you.
Well, there they should have had gun control.
There's an opportunity for someone from Tasmania to create themselves in iconic form. The first openly lesbian politician has been elected to the Tasmanian Parliament. That's rather impressive that even though it was necessary for her to proclaim that she was not heterosexual, there is an amount of pride nowadays for what the sexuality is that you're in effect defending.
But Chris, also you've got to remember she had some great role models to follow, which meant she had Penny Wong in the federal parliament and the other Greens senator who is also out as married to the...
The path had been laid.
But
her name alone guarantees she'd got the job.
Why?
Well, if you stand for public office and your name's Alison Standen, she's going to end up standing.
You're right there, Phil. Yeah.
A good move. Leadership to me is about connection to values, she said, and about courage to stand up for the things that matter most. And to her, that was GLBTQI rights and addressing social inequality in general. So obviously she is to the left of the centre. She's Labour politician.
Chris, that would have been something similar to what Jed Kearney did in Batman. Mm. She was standing up for what she believed in as far as the things that people were interested in and wanted to be something to be done. And that's how I think she got in more than anything else in Batman. And she's a very, very well-known lady in the field of looking out for people that were not as good as anybody else, you know.
Yeah. Mm. Now, the tide of opinion has changed because Alison Standen said that during the election that her and her partner talked publicly about their relationship and their family without any major backlash.
Well, there couldn't be because we've just had same-sex marriage equality put through, haven't we? Why would there be backlash?
Well, bigots be bigots.
Yeah, I suppose.
They're not going to run away.
Yeah, but it's got to the point now where I think we'll be accepted more and more into open society, and people will realise that we're not two-headed monsters, but we're just ordinary people.
And I'd like to think Joy are part of that progress too.
And I'm sure Joy are, and helping to lead that progress.
Stay tuned. There's more.
Joy. Out. Loud. Proud.
You're with Gordon, Phil and Chris. Been there, done that on Joy 94.9. Thanks for being with us. We've got a full program and ahead of us we've got some disastrous things, if in fact the cricket team isn't a disaster on its own. We've got a warning because on the 1st of April, things are going to go a little bit silly and funny and cranky.
Only up until midday.
Oh, all right then. And we've got a few gay birthdays of icons, dicons, bicons, and things like that. But, Gordon, you've got an icon for us to talk about.
This lady is a true icon of the community and herself and the sport she played. Talking about Renee Stubbs, she was born on the 26th of March in 1971. She's a retired tennis player now, and she holds almost the record. She was the Australian Institute of Sports scholarship holder. She won 4 Grand Slam doubles titles and 2 Grand Slam mixed doubles titles. And she was in the Summer Olympic Games in Atlanta in 1996, Sydney in 2000, Athens in 2004, and Beijing in 2008. So she was doing a lot of tennis playing for the Olympics as well. But she's also part of the Australian Fed Cup.
But why don't I know about her? Didn't she throw tantrums?
No, I don't think so.
Chuck rackets?
I just think she just...
Didn't swear.
I just think she played tennis like you're supposed to do. She didn't grunt when she was serving and she didn't do anything like that. And she was just a lady. She just conducted herself with great decorum, I thought.
But tennis is one of the nicest sports in the world.
Why?
Because it starts off on the score, love all.
Oh, yes, that's true too, yeah.
I won't tell you the origin of the word love in that.
No.
I think you have in the past, and it's been filed away very deeply.
All right, well, in that case, seeing you've requested it again, it's actually, it's French tennis, it's French royal tennis.
Royal tennis.
And the beginning of the game is a 0-0 match score, but on the board, when it was written down, it looked like an egg. And the French word for egg is œuf.
Mm.
And œuf, as in love.
L'œuf.
Yeah. I've got a story about eggs.
Mm.
What does a hen do?
Clucks.
Lays eggs, bro.
Lays eggs, bro.
That sounds like a Kiwi joke, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, actually, it should have said, what's a hen do? Not what does a hen do?
Yeah.
very good then. So Renee Stubbs
I think she's now the captain of the Australian Fed Cup team. I think she's in charge of that and goes with the women when they're playing the Fed Cup. Mm. Yes, she's been an icon of the sport. That's for sure.
And anybody who's in the women's teams would know her.
Mm. I don't think the lady from WA was very happy with her being in charge.
Oh, you mean
Margaret,
Maggie.
Mm. I don't think she was very happy with Renee, but I don't care. I thought she was one of our better players and was always an icon of the sport.
Yeah.
You know, and it was good.
27-3, the 27th of March.
Mm-hmm.
Not a good day to leave home.
Well,
not if you're going by history.
By the time this show goes to air, you'll be
probably too late for the warning.
Yeah, we're at 2300 hours But if you're listening on the Wednesday morning or a podcast subsequently, then you've survived. The 27th of the 3rd. Over the years, recently, not a particularly good date. Philip?
We'll start off in 1964 on March 27th, which happened to be a Friday. Poor old Alaska, and in particular Anchorage, the capital, was not the capital, the biggest city.
The biggest city.
Had a 9.2 earthquake, killing 125 people and creating a whole new landscape. I was there many, many years after 1964. The bay sunk.
Ooh.
8 feet, leaving cliffs where there used to be beaches.
8 feet would be about nearly 2.5 metres.
It's a long way.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing just collapsed. One of the streets, main streets in the city, the one side of, like you've got your stripe down the middle, one side of the road fell, or maybe the other side went up. I don't know which way it actually worked. But this, if you get out your Google machines and look at some of the photos from the time, it just shows you what Mother Earth can do when you're not paying attention.
Now, does that mean that it was a volcanic area and things were happening deep down inside the ground?
No, it's just sitting there on the top end of the San Andreas Fault, our friend.
That's because, but don't the two, one goes up the west coast of America and the other one goes up through...
Well, you've got the American plate.
East coast through Japan, New Zealand, Japan.
And that's the Ring of Fire.
Yeah, that's the Ring of... they've got these things all the way around.
There's ointment for that now, but... It's those volcanoes have been problematic in the past, but the I think the Pacific plate is being forced below the American other one. Plate.
Yeah,
and they get upset.
Yes, I saw. I saw that on television how they said it was going underneath the plate. Yeah. So what happened after that?
125 died. Well, that's a substantial loss of life in anybody's book.
Alaska in 1964 would not have been the most populous place.
No.
Even now, it's absolutely beautiful.
That would have been a lot of people out of the population, wouldn't it?
Would have been a big percentage.
Mm-hmm.
But then in 1977, a couple of queens of the sky...
Not you and me.
No. Or trolley dollies. But a couple of Boeing 747s... had an altercation.
In one of the most beautiful places in the world, being Tenerife.
Yeah.
On the Canary Islands.
And that's got nothing to do with birds, named after canines.
Canines, Canaris.
Aren't we just so full of information?
Oh, God, yes.
Anyway, these two planes were held up, it was at least overnight, by some shocking fog. And there'd also been a bomb threat at the major airport, which is why all these planes were diverted to Tenerife.
No.
They had a real logjam of aircraft. And these would have been amongst the first two to take off the following morning. Fog was still pretty thick. And the radio or the control tower was communicating to the two pilots through a system that was really not as modern as we obviously have today.
Well, that's
so
true.
Only one person could talk at a time. And the Pan Am 747... was on the runway. It had gone to its correct
It had moved point. Moved out ready to take off, had it.
And the KLM, the Dutch one, was behind it, like further down the runway.
Mm-hmm.
And according to the recordings, the Dutch pilot assumed he'd been given the go-ahead to take
priority.
Off. And the Pan Am was literally a sitting duck.
Sitting right in the middle of the runway ready to be hit.
Yep.
Mm. How many people died in that one?
Oh, there were 583.
That's a
combined toll.
Combined toll for the
two 747s. Mm,
mm.
The good news is would have been so sudden.
Yeah.
Actually, it was after they were putting out the fire on the KLM that they became aware that the Pan Am was actually on the runway. Nobody could see the jet, so they didn't know what was happening.
Now, that would have led to a whole mess of changes in procedures and processes, surely, for takeoffs and landings?
Yeah, the...
And communications?
The communication was probably the biggest problem in the system they had, only one person could talk at once.
And you've got two planes, but only one can talk, so the second plane wouldn't know what the first plane
and
was saying.
It's called single duplex, or half duplex in computer terms. Mm. So the only one thing can have the... It's like having a board of directors and one microphone. only one can talk at a time, but unfortunately it actually cut off the signal to the others. So it wasn't like a three-way meeting. Oh. And, yeah, the bits of communication that went through led to disaster.
Yeah, just... yeah. Well, what was the third one? We're getting some good ones here.
Well, this was 1980, and a North Sea oil, or no, an accommodation platform, not an oil rig, collapsed.
Into the sea?
Yeah, between Norway and Denmark and the UK.
Wow.
Not a good place to go for a swim, I would imagine.
And the water would have been a little bit on the chilly side.
And there were gale force winds.
I reckon hypothermia wouldn't have taken very long.
Yeah.
Mm.
So sometimes it's a bit of a blessing in these things, even though they're disastrous.
Yeah.
You don't want to, imagine that.
Our community is stronger with Joy. Become a member, joy.org.au.
You're on Joy 94.9. Gordon, Philip and Chris, been there, done that. You've been a naughty boy, Philip, haven't you?
I talk out of school. Or I talk in school, maybe.
You go to the back of the room and stand in with the nose in the corner.
I have been given a dunce hat more than once in my life.
I find that hard to believe.
Well, it's punishment. It doesn't mean I'm inferior.
Exactly, yes.
We're coming up towards the end of the month of March. We've had a change of season almost, haven't we? And
can I remind you that on the 1st of April, you have to change your daylight saving.
Okay, and which way do we put
the
clocks?
We go forward.
No.
You spring forward.
Spring forward. We go backwards. Back. We go backwards, yes. We've got to have an extra hour of darkness in the morning.
If there's a group of people in Melbourne next week who are 2 hours off, please contact Gordon at home on this number.
That used to happen on GPS on Sunday mornings. People would ring up and say, what time is it?
So where are you? Because it matters.
Yeah, well, fortunately, the little gremlins that live inside our smartphones seem to get it right.
Well, they always change. You don't have to worry about your phones. They will change for you, but everything else in the house has to be changed. Oh. But go backwards, yes.
1st of April.
April Fool's Day.
Oh. Well, now, that's always... I don't know why particularly the 1st of April. It seems not inappropriate, but it's probably connected with seasons in the Northern Hemisphere.
No. As the Simpsons duly explained to us, it was another pagan ritual, and with the pagans celebrating New Year in April when everybody else had decided to do it January 1st, so they became April Fools for celebrating a different date.
Oh, really?
You can learn something from The Simpsons.
But there was also one of some of the others they used to have. The Lord of Misrule was in charge of the April Fool's Day.
And who was Misrule when she was at home?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if she must have been different because she was the Lord of Misrule.
Ooh. Well, she might have been trans.
Mm. Yeah.
Could have been.
They would have confused a lot of people.
I did in those days, yes. Yes.
So what's likely to happen that's going to involve us, possibly?
I don't think we get any really good public stunts anymore, do we? Like Dick Smith and his iceberg in Sydney Harbour.
Well, they had the spaghetti tree in Switzerland.
I can remember that Dan Webb copied that when I was in my preteen years, and they were there picking the spaghetti off the tree. And, of course, we just figured that was fact. But there was another one where, during the construction of the Westgate Bridge, there was a story that the engineers had miscalculated the angle that the bridge went over the river,
yeah,
to the point where it would completely miss the road coming from the other side. So the conclusion they made, and they should have actually built this, was to just build two bridges, which now would have been really handy.
Yeah, would have been.
Yeah, like double the amount of lanes. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so that was an April Fool's joke.
Yeah, that backfired.
But there's been some great ones through history with different things, and I can always remember, I think I've told you this one a bit about this one before, about the Sydney University students that rang the police department and said that there was going to be some, they found out the council were going to dig a hole in the middle of the road or something or other, and so they rang the police department and told them that there was some university students were going to do a April Fool's Day prank and dig a hole in the middle of the road.
Yeah.
And then they rang the council and said that there were some students dressed as policemen who were going to come and stop them digging the hole. And there was absolute confusion. And I remember reading about that one. And I thought that would have been something to stand off and look at.
It's also a good day for prank calls. And the Simpsons, again, are known for that, where they call the pub and ask for ridiculous names, which Mo will then say out loud.
And it'd be...
But It's usually quite offensive.
Well, yes, or naughty.
Yes.
The zoo often gets calls for Mr. Lion.
Well, I got a call once, so, you know, can you go check to see if your fridge is running? And I says, yes, it's running. I said, well, you better go after it.
Just be wary that we might be things are happening on your smartphone or on your TV.
But you're not allowed to do it after midday because they're supposed to come back at you.
If you do a prank after midday, you're the fool.
You're the fool. Yes, that's right. You have to do it before midday.
In France, they call that event
April Fish.
Because the trick was that if you snuck up behind someone, you could put on their back of their jacket a smelly fish.
Oh,
and
right.
And they wouldn't know where the smell was coming from. But that morphed into being just a paper fish. That's what the pranksters often still do.
Well, we used to do those as young ones with a sign saying, kick me on the back, and you put it on the back of it. People in the school, other kids in the school, you walk up and say, oh, g'day, how are you, and pat them on the back. And
those classics never go away, do they?
No, they don't.
Now you probably just send a text.
You do, yeah. And then that would be called bullying.
That's right.
Mm.
On the 23rd of March 1903 is a game called Monopoly. But it wasn't as we know it at the moment when it was first invented. Obviously, a lot of these things, these games are refined.
The original name was Landlord's Game.
Why was it so called, Gordon?
Because the lady that invented it wanted people to work out none of the properties were ever for sale. If you bought them, you had to rent them, or you if you landed on them and you got them somehow or other, I'm not sure what her rules were at the beginning, but you had to only pay rent, which showed the people that were playing it how the capitalism was forcing them to keep these people in comfort and luxury while they were getting nowhere.
The Monopoly concept came out of one person owned all the property
That's
and rented
right.
it out.
Yes, yes.
Hence the name Monopoly coming
That's
around.
Right. Yeah, well,
but it was really, I guess, to expose the injustice to the masses.
Well, there's one duke in England that owns half of London. He's a very, very rich man, and that's where they get all their wealth from.
He'll end up just as dead as the rest of us. So.
Yeah, but then it'll all go to his son.
Yeah, well-deserved.
So this is the thing. But Monopoly is a fantastic game. It also teaches, these days, it teaches young people the art of buying and selling, and charging rents and making money out of property.
But I think
the original purpose
was... It starts
to
a lot earlier before you have the concept of playing a game like that, because a game is still a game is still a game, whereas actually giving kids a money for reward for work done is a good example initially for the kids to learn.
How to get money is you have to work for it.
You
don't give it to it. You're never given it.
Can't just put your hand out?
You get it smacked or have something else put in it.
Kids go to the supermarket with their mum and they never see notes or coins go out. Mum uses a plastic. Oh, you know, this is what you do. Yeah, it all happens. Food's free.
The younger generation that are coming on now, like the little ones, they won't even know what money was, because by the time they grow up to have money, it'll all be on a card.
Digital,
it'll be all digital. They won't have dollar coins and what have you. Yeah, it'll all be gone by the boards. Probably be in another generation, I would say.
Yeah. But one of the things the government has actually done recently is announce on the pharmaceutical benefits scheme a new series of drugs and medicines that are going to be subsidised by the Commonwealth government here in Australia.
That's happening on the 1st of the month, isn't it? 1st of April.
And then there's lots of little specialised drugs that are being charged for exorbitant prices from the manufacturers, and I don't know how they justify that, but our government has said, well, we're going to subsidise and the general public can foot that tax bill.
Those big companies justify the price because it's cost them all that time to develop the drugs and manufacture them. That's why they say they charge them so much.
I don't know how they can actually measure that in dollar and cents.
But you've got to remember, they're billion-dollar businesses, of course.
There was recently a fellow who had a particular medicine under his company, and he just skyrocketed the price. He's now been fined. He's been struck off the register. He's in the can. He has been demoted by his own actions.
Yeah, but one of the drugs that's being put on the PBS scheme now, as of the 1st of April, will be the PrEP thing, which is going to affect a lot of people in our community, because it's one of the drugs that is going to help stop the spread of HIV.
Well, it's 99% effective in preventing HIV.
That's right, yes.
Which I guess is the golden egg we've been waiting for.
Yep.
Since the 80s. But PrEP stands for pre-exposure prophylaxis, which is easy for me to say.
And the point is that if somebody that isn't negative with no sign of the HIV virus, if they take the PrEP regularly, they can have safe sex with people who are positive but have a negative status. So yeah.
It is going to be very useful in the indigenous communities where they don't, for various reasons, consider themselves at risk and they don't use condoms or have them available to use.
Well, they don't practice safe sex. No. This is the point.
But this will now mean that, okay, if anybody has got HIV in their system, if the whole community is dosed up, then there'll be nothing to be transmitted. And even if something is transmitted, it won't be able to be received and activated.
But this is probably going to wipe out the HIV epidemic that has been around the world for many years. I don't know how they're going to do it in Africa, because Africa won't have a PBS scheme like we have here in Australia. They don't even have one like this in America. In America, it costs thousands of dollars a year to use your HIV medication.
So we might have lots of tourists.
But the one big step is going to be education, just having the solution, unless you encourage our community to go out and take it.
If you're a young person who hasn't seen the after effects of HIV, go out and take it. That's all I can recommend.
Love radio? Joy is now on iHeartRadio. Take us with you anywhere.
You're with Gordon, Phil and Chris. Been there, done that, Joy 94.9. Thanks for being with us.
You can communicate with us via email at beenthere@joy.org.au. You can tell us what you think. You can request songs. We can't guarantee playing them, but requests are nice.
We don't mind a request.
Oh, we're often told where to go.
But that's an order. That's not a request.
Oh, no, please go.
Yes, put a please in front of it. Yes, yes.
Now, we've got a few birthdays that we need to bring up. Icons and dicons and bicons. One of the interesting ones that is coming up about this time is Sir Dirk Bogarde. 28th of March 1921 he was born, and died on the 8th of May 1999. Now, he has got a funny name for an Englishman, but he was actually born in Belgium. Two Belgian parents, but he moved to UK and has become a famous actor with them. But he, for our particular community, undertook a very, very bold step in one of his films. The film was called The Victim, and it portrayed a gay man.
But he wasn't, he was actually married. He was a solicitor. He was actually married. And he came out one day from his house, and on the front of his garage door was written the word poof, or queer, I think, queer. Yeah. And from then on, his life went into an absolute tailspin. And he had to fight to clear his name. You know, it cost him his marriage and all the rest of it. It was a very, very, very powerful movie at the time. I can remember seeing it over in Perth back in the 50s.
Yeah, well... In lots of ways, in the film The Victim, he was the screen's first gay hero because the film was rather graphic, and it was set in a court, and Dirk Bogarde had to justify his behaviour. And he just said, you know, I have no option. I am gay.
But most of the people in the court, if it had been in real life, most of them probably were gay anyhow.
Yeah.
Because a lot of those top ranked people in Britain at the time were part of our community, but they were never out because they couldn't afford to be, because of the way that they could be jailed for having gay sex and all the rest of it.
It's moments like those you wish you had the French Napoleonic Code, which said that people couldn't be jailed for homosexual activity.
That went right back to 1771 or something, rather.
Something like that. In fact, because Napoleon had conquered parts of Italy at that stage, it became adopted in the Italian law as well.
Yes.
And it is called the Napoleonic Code.
Okay. So you can't be jailed in sent to jail in France or Italy for having gay sex. You know,
for being who you are.
For being who you are, yes, that's the thing. It's just one of those things. It's what we should have had it here ages ago, and so should have Britain.
However, we've got Marlon Brando, who was a little bit risque in his behaviours.
He played both sides of the fence very, very comfortably, and he didn't care because he was Marlon Brando. When you've got the cachet that Marlon Brando had, you could do almost anything without having to worry.
When you've got the body that he had as a younger man.
Yeah, well, you're not wrong there.
Well, it would have been impolite to say no if somebody asked
to
go out with them.
That's right. Well, apparently when he was filming that war movie in southern Thailand or one of those somewhere around there, he was in it and he was having an affair with the Thai Prime Minister at the same time. Yeah, so good on him.
Some people enjoy Thai food.
Yes, exactly.
That's scandalous behaviour indeed. Stephen Sondheim.
Oh.
He was a marvellous musician and lyricist. He did lots of interesting plays that are still lurking around at the moment. His birthday was on the 22nd of March 1930, and he is still with us. A ripe the old age, but what would we know him for, Gordon?
Well, he wrote things like the A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, The Company, Follies, A Little Night Music, Pacific Overtures, Sweeney Todd. You could go on and on and on. He was a very complicated man because he didn't want to recognise his gayness, but he was gay and he used to play on the side and all the rest of it. It was he had a very unusual life when you go and read his whole story, but he was just a brilliant musician. He wrote so many wonderful Broadway shows that are still performed. You know, you get presentations. We'd like they bring back Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum quite frequently. Follies is another one that gets done.
So
all
you're
the time.
Suggesting there are gay people on Broadway.
Oh, am I? Yes, I must be.
So first it was Hollywood, now it's Broadway, yes. Of all places.
Oh, well, I guess it sort of runs in the family, perhaps.
Well, yes. In fact, our Air Force team, the Roulettes, are closely related to the Rockettes.
Are they?
In New York, yeah.
Oh, right.
Just a few different letters in the spelling there.
Oh, right. So
I don't think they do the high kicks, though.
Well, it'd be hard to do a high kick in an aeroplane doing speed of sound,
well,
wouldn't
you'd
it?
Go backwards, wouldn't you?
You'd sort of go up in the air and down again or somewhere.
And very hard to stay in a straight line as the way the Rockettes do.
Oh,
right,
yes.
Across the stage.
Right across that big...
Radio City Musical.
Yep, and that's the biggest stage in America, I believe. The widest stage in America.
Easily.
Probably twice as wide as the State Theatre here.
And you're listening to Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9. And here's Chris.
With another birthday we're celebrating, a gay icon. No, she's an icon for the gay community.
Oh, right. Yes, that's right.
We're born on the 28th of March, 1986. A real youngster.
She was born that way, or born this way.
Oh, she was. Well, that's right.
Which is one of my favourite anthems.
Stefani Joanne Angelina Geminotta.
No wonder she changed her name to Lady Gaga. It wouldn't have gone on this.
She was named after a Queen song.
Was she?
Radio Gaga.
Radio Gaga, that's
which
right.
Which is one of their best songs.
That's where she got her name from.
Yep.
But as I say, you wouldn't want to have had that big name on a record label. They wouldn't have had room to print anything else.
I'd release it as a 12-inch single.
Yes. Who
well,
are you talking about?
Lady Gaga says that she wants to revolutionise pop music and be, you know, as new and fresh as Madonna was, and Michael Jackson as well, and a few other Freddie Mercury. She's sort of avant-garde.
She's a very good friend of the gay community. That's for our community, that's for sure. She's very, very popular with
her. She put the show back in the biz.
Yes, that's about right.
Because there were plenty of good singers around, but how many of them could wear a meat dress to an awards ceremony?
Yes, exactly.
Or arrive in an egg.
Yes. Oh, what's name used to arrive in a shoe? Bette Midler used to arrive in a big shoe. Yeah.
But she got a kick out of her job.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, then she slide down it like a slide and come out of the toe.
There we are. And she is not a friend of Donald Trump.
No, she hates Donald Trump. No. So, it's amazing how most of the entertainment industry don't like Donald. I don't know why.
But he was part of the entertainment industry at one stage.
That's all he should be doing.
If you call that.
Go back into the television and fire everybody. Well, he's doing that anyhow.
Mm. Look at the clock. It's time for us to go.
Oh, my goodness. So it is.
Run away.
It is. Run away, indeed. Okay, thanks for being with us. We'll catch you next week. And until then, cheerio.
And have a good week.
And it's goodbye from me.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.